I brought the Wiseye home to pattern the deer on my property, but what I found is I have a very patternable coyote. No problem. The trigger speed on the Wiseye lets me know as soon as he's in range of the camera. The flash lets me see him no matter where he is. And the speed that the camera sends the pictures to my telephone will ensure that he's not trying to get Carl Wayne the kitty cat on his menu anymore. Check them out at the Digital Outdoor Store on Facebook, Amazon, or at their website, WiseEyeTechnologies.com. Tonight's podcast, man, we're going to go and we're going to focus on the moderate fisherman, the average Joe that's going to go out. He's not a tournament guy, and we're looking at the guys that's just going out, weekend warrior kind of things. Got with the dude, Justin Bailey over at K&M. If you know Justin, he's Kenny and Marcy's right-hand guy. And told me the other night we were scoring deer, he said, hey, why don't you do a podcast with Matthew Rogers? Like, what are you talking about? I've seen Matthew on TikTok. Didn't know anything about him. Bailey was like, man, he'd make a great interview. I'm telling you. So I went on Bailey's word, and I think this is going to be a home run for you. For the guys who we're not focusing on tournament guys, we're not focused on seasoned fishermen. We're focused on guys who are just kind of getting in the sport a little bit, wetting their whistle, and going out there, what you need, I'm not going to say the basics, but the moderate stuff. So hope you guys like it. I want to do something real quick. This podcast is 100% Greg Hicks sponsored, okay? I don't make a dime off this thing. All the ads that you hear, those are my friends. And I do that, number one, to you know, give filler to the podcast, help those guys out, get them some publicity, but also just to kind of make this podcast sound a little better, in my opinion. And when I get things that you know, appreciation stuff, that means a lot. Taylor Barton, Tall Timber Bait Company. One of my friends, John Duncan, he works with Taylor. Taylor sent some jig heads and some flies and stuff like that, and he says, I really enjoy the fishing episodes on your podcast so far. Keep up the good work. Thank you, Taylor. That means a lot because, you know, every 45-minute hour podcast I do, you're looking at 2 hours worth of edit, maybe sometimes three. And so I want this thing to sound as professional as I can. For you, I want it to sound good for the listeners. I do this as a hobby. Okay, this is almost like therapy to me because I enjoy talking, I enjoy sharing information, and I'm learning about crappie fishing at the same time we're talking on this stuff. So thank you, Taylor. I appreciate it. Go check them out, Tall Timber Bait Company, on Facebook, and I believe they're on TikTok as well. Let's get in with Matthew Rogers. I hope you like it. This podcast coming in, man, we're coming off hunting season. What we want to do this evening is we want to talk with a guy who I like. I follow him, and I'm a TikTok guy. I love to look at I get lost in TikTok. And I found Matthew Rogers, and I love it. He is so, I mean, he's got informational stuff. It's good stuff. And a good friend of ours, Justin Bailey, over at K&M, he's like, man, you know, you should do one with Matthew. And got us lined up. Matthew, how you doing, brother?
Man, hey, I'm doing good, Greg. How are you?
Doing good, man. Doing good. So give us a little background on you. Tell us how you're fishing. I mean, when you started fishing, where you're from. You know, just tell us who you are, basically.
Man, of course, my name's Matt Rogers. I'm from, I guess you could say, southwest Missouri. Not far south, though. Kind of pretty close to center of the state, I guess you could say. I'm about an hour south of Kansas City. And about an hour north of Springfield. My closest lake is Stockton Lake, and I have Truman Lake not too far, but I also had where I cut my teeth, you know, from whenever I was real little, was Shell Osage, a conservation area. It's got, you know, some duck marshes and stuff like that, and a lot of backwater stuff that would flood, and there was a lot of, you know, concrete infrastructures on it, you know, for these duck marshes that would retain water, and the crappie would get kind of stuck there. And that's kind of where a lot of my crappie fishing got started specifically. But I had you know, been fishing since I was really young, probably 3, 4, you know. My grandfather had bought a farm, and You know, the farm was his pride and joy. And I remember, you know, vividly as, I mean, itty bitty, spending just tons and tons of time with him, you know, there. None of my family ever had a boat and went and lake fish or anything like that. And that might have been what helped drive me later on, you know, gave me that drive, like the, you know, I mean, I was as hungry as I think anybody could be for it, and probably because I didn't have somebody that was throwing me in a boat every weekend. And a buddy of mine says the same thing. His dad would leave him there, you know, crying at the screen door to go fish in a tournament with his buddy. And he said he thinks that's why he is so hungry for it now. And he ended up winning a BFL All-American, you know, bass fishing. And that's a really big thing. And I think that, you know, there's several ways that drive and hunger can be developed. But I was fortunate to have my grandpa that spent a ton of time with me out there at the pond, and just catching anything, you know. No, then it wasn't worried about what it was that was going to bite. I was just ready to catch something. So I'd say, you know, that was really where it got started. My dad took me to ponds here and there through my mid, you know, I'm 25, so my midlife, you know, around 10, 11. But whenever I was 10 years old, there was a guy that guided on Truman Lake that happened to be at a little outdoor show. And long story short, I was swindling him a little bit. I was talking to him, and he told me if I won that turkey calling contest that they had, that I would be able to go on a guided fishing trip with him. And his name was Richard Bowling. And I ended up winning it, and first thing I did, you know, ran back to this guy because I was just infatuated with fishing. But even at that time, I remember I was infatuated with crappie. You know, I don't know what it was. Something about them just was awesome. So I just really liked it. And whenever he took me, and he took me single pole jig fishing on Truman Lake, you know, of course, no electronics back then. It was just that pure element of surprise whenever one would hit the jig or hit the minnow. And, man, I was hooked. From that point on, all I could think about was how am I going to get a boat and go fishing? And, I was in and out on, school, man. I couldn't stay in school. Not that I wasn't smart at it. I just couldn't stand being there thinking about, you know, my dad was out hunting. He hunted a lot, traveled and hunted a lot. And I was thinking about, you know, hunting or fishing. And I ended up getting Lyme disease, actually, getting pretty sick. When I was 16, I was doing a lot of different treatments to try to get rid of it, and actually quit school, and was really focusing on that at the time. I mean, I was pretty down and out. And got control of it a little bit, and went back to school at 18. But whenever I was 17, I had a race car. This was the, you know, the defining moment. I decided to get rid of that race car and buy a boat. A boat came up for sale, didn't have a motor and hang on it, but it was $2,500, and I was like, you know, I can get that. I figured out how to get a loan, you know, and get a motor for it. And it had one little graph on it. And me and my dad, I had it. It was at the console. And I got that boat. And, you know, very first times we put it in the most dangerous part of Truman Lake. And we ended up hitting. I mean, I had no clue how that GPS on one worked. Nothing. Hit a railroad track, killed it on a stump. And matter of fact, I was like, let's go back down the lake where, you know, I've heard it's safer. We put down there, and I hit something way harder down there than, wow, I did up. And so we ended up catching, you know, like 15 or 16 crappie. And, you know, for me and my dad to go do that, that was probably a defining moment for me as well, for my passion for it. Because that meant everything, you know. We thought we were on top of the mountain. So I started just fishing a lot, put a lot of time in on the water. I went back to school at 18 because my grandpas both told me, you know, they wanted me to get that done, and I respected them. You know, I mean, I can't even explain the amount of respect I have for both my grandparents. And I went back. I got it done. It took me a little while. Graduated at 20. And for my graduation, my dad helped me trade that. I traded that one in, and he helped me, you know, finance a little Ranger, a little aluminum Ranger. But whenever doing the financing, I was able to get some electronics. And I always told him, you know, if I could get those electronics, I think I could, you know, figure this thing out. And not any live imaging or anything, just, you know, your traditional sonar and your side imaging. So I got a hold of that, and man, I'd already been catching a lot of fish. You know, I mean, I can vividly remember the gruesome, you know, daylight to dark middle of summer days up there in my first boat, you know, all by myself, just putting the time in and trying to understand the fish, you know, not just catching them, trying to understand why they were in a spot. And I just put stuff together. I actually had started a book, and I went with this notebook for about a year, and I lost it, and I need to redo it. And because I can still remember a lot of the stuff, so I really need to restart one. But spent a lot of time, and that summer that I got out of school, I had met a guy named J.R. Odom, which was the owner of Outlaw Crappie Poles. And he kind of, you know, told me about this guiding thing, and I'd been catching a lot of fish, and then he took me out, and he was showing me, you know, extra stuff and helped me develop some skills. And he said, would you want a guide? And I did. I wanted to try it. And he hooked me up with a guy over on Stockton Lake, and the guy gave me a full-time guide job with his outfitter. And man, it was history from there. I ended up parting ways from him later that summer after running, you know, a lot of guide trips for him. And that is the summer that I then got upgraded boats a little bit, got a fiberglass boat, and I started fishing a lot of tournaments. I'd been fishing tournaments before, you know, but I was kind of in that mid pack, not understanding, you know, what I was doing wrong, because I was catching fish, but I wasn't catching the size of the fish that I needed to. And I figured out, you know, some of the things later on, you know, that I was doing the right way. I didn't, the technology wasn't there for me. I couldn't afford the Humminbird 360 or anything like that at that time. And I think that would have even been very crucial for me, because I was trying to fish a lot of offshore stuff where people weren't at. Mm-hmm. But once I was able to get that boat and I kind of slowed down on the guide, and I was still guiding, but I would guide at Truman, and then I'd burn all my profits up after the guide trip and go run around and, you know, fish for the rest of the day. So, you know, that's a defining moment, I guess, for somebody, you know, when you're fishing your local derby, especially like as bass fishermen develop, you know, you're not fishing to make money by any means. And I mean, that's a whole nother subject. That's so hard to do, but you're fishing because you love it. You're trying to prove to yourself, you know, what your limitations are, what you can do. And, so I was just fishing, you know, as many tournaments locally as I could. Like I said, burning up all the profits from my guide trips. And I ended up qualifying, getting a call from Mike Valentine, the director of Crappie Masters at the time. And they had a bump down list. And so many people, you know, couldn't make it, because the tournament that I finished like, you know, 26th, 27th. So they had and that was a national qualifier that was on Truman Lake. So I had qualified for that classic, and I'd been winning some other little tournaments at this point, and developing patterns and how I rotated throughout a day and when I'd go fish stuff. And I was pretty prepared for the classic. I had started understanding a lot more about big fish, and this is, you know, all rolled into one real tight summer whenever I started understanding that some specific things. And I ended up leaving the first day, and of course, you know, he didn't sleep much. There was my tournament partner at that time was a kid my age, Baylor Mead, and we kind of had a game plan for the next day, and we went and did it, and we struggled quite a bit that next day, but we still ended up pulling it off and winning it, and then it just snowballed. That next year I went and fished the National Trail, and I ended up winning the Angler of the Year with it, and you know, it's just been history. And I did that with my dad, and we got second that following year in the Classic. And so, you know, we kind of have a vendetta. We really want to win a Classic together. And so that's the, you know, the tournament fishing side of it. But as far as recreational fishing goes, you know, I spent a lot of time on the water, and you know, I'd guided quite a bit, and I've done a few articles here and there and some stuff, and you know, several YouTube videos. And you hit it earlier, you know, TikTok. I kind of hit the TikTok deal a couple years ago. I'd probably watched it for a year or so, and then I thought it was kind of fun, you know, sharing specific things on there that showcase, you know, Garmin LiveScope. But that's definitely not the whole, you know, realm of fishing. You know, is not just oriented to live sonar, LiveScope, and electronics. There's still, you know, a lot of fishing involved with it, more than what people think. You know, there's still a lot of patterning fish on some lakes, and there's some lakes that it's not so much about patterning the fish, but there's still a lot of fish to be caught, you know, without electronics, and mm-hmm. That's kind of what we wanted to talk about a little bit. So,
Listen, now, you know, you said something earlier. There's a few things I'm going to go back on that I've got logged in my brain, and one of them you're going to laugh at me about. But one thing is, it seems like there's more and more guys of your ranking in the professional angler ranking in the crappie world who got into it through their grandparents. And, you know, and it's funny because when crappie fishing really started coming on big in Lake Darbonne, you know, me and my buddy out there trying, and he said, you got to be patient. That's why it's an old man sport. Do you think that, you know, the older generation and their patience kind of maybe skipped and got to the grandchildren? Because I'm telling you, man, it looks, now I look at you guys, there's a lot of younger guys in these pro rankings now that are good. And a lot of them learn from their grandparents.
Yeah, I definitely think so. I think that, you know, you of course, you got the kids that were wild and has pans, and who knows what they're doing. And then you got the kids that were really paid attention to, you know, whenever their grandparents talked about specific things. And, you know, I mean, I remember both my grandparents always telling me, you know, both of them saying, you know, you can wish for something in one hand and crap in the other one and see which one fills up faster, you know. And I think there is a lot of kids that have that drive and determination. And I do think, in a way, social media has helped with that specifically, because you see that the exposure is there more. And same thing with, you know, the dabble technology. You know, I mean, I do believe that it hurts in some ways too, just as much as it can help. But kids were watching Bassmaster growing up, and it gives them something to, you know, strive for. You know, something, you know, you want to be like Kevin Van Dam. Everybody wants to be Kevin Van Dam. And I think, you know, the way you're brought up has a lot to do with that and those defining moments in your life. You know, like I said, you know, I mean, if I wouldn't have had my grandpa taking me out like he did, man, that it just might not have developed the way it did.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And I think, you know, now you got high school fishing as well for like bass, and there's so much more information out there. And I hit it on, I had a podcast that I did last night, a live stream. And I hit on some specific things, like the part where, you know, there's so much more information out there, and people are humans. We're all humans, and like, we're all capable of just about anything any other human does. There's some things physically that we're not, but you know, as far as like fishing goes, the information's there. It's how willing you are to accept that you might be wrong about something and be open-minded and go try something else. And I struggle with it every time I go fishing. When I practice for a tournament, I have so many bad habits that I break. But, I mean, that's the number one goal, I guess, in life. Every morning you wake up, you're trying to be better person and be better at what you do. And, I think that's, you know, the whole point of it all.
Yeah. I mean, you fail enough times, eventually you're going to succeed. You know, if you go out there and you fail, It's going to stick. I'm, you know, I may not be that way about fishing. I'm like that with archery. I thank God I've got a friend that's like that with crappie fishing. He has stuck with it for years, and he finally it clicked. You know, and now he's catching fish, and I'll go out there with him and catch a few. And you know, you like you say, it's just you have to be willing to go suffer through those hard times to actually understand and get it. Because if it clicks real quick, was it really worth it? You know, it's something that you yeah. want to grasp and hold on to.
I talk about it all the time. You know, I mean, I'm 25. I finally got a house. I've got two kids, one on the way, fiance. I got everything that I, you know, I guess a man could ever want. I got a shop to put my boat in. It does have some crickets that like to chirp quite a bit. I'm surprised they're not in here chirping now, but I can deal with some crickets to have me an insulated shop. And it's almost like an empty feeling once you get it all, because I think the ride to get here was a lot more fun than having it.
I agree with that. I will agree.
You know, I think I enjoyed playing with the tackle out cold nights with a headlamp on in my dad's yard when I was still living at home in my first boat. And, you know, I mean, I had three rods and, you know, I had to make do with them. That's what I had. I think that it's a lot more rewarding through the process. And, you know, the only way it's rewarding to me now is, you know, that my kids get to see something and see me be successful at something. And, that means more to me probably than the winning or being successful at it, you know, itself. I mean, you know, 'cause I know if I'm not, they're still there when I get home.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You know, I tell people all the time, you know, those fish are always going to be in that water. The deer are always going to be in the woods, and the ducks are always going to be in the sky. What's going on at the house ain't always going to be there. You know, they're going to grow up and move out, and so you need to make sure you've taken enough time with your family as much as you can, you know.
Yep. That's kind of what hit me in the face this last fall. The summer, you know, I realized, like, when I got home, and my boys are, one's four, and, well, he's going to be four in February, and the other one is going to be three in June. And like, it was just like overnight when I got back one day, you know, they were just huge, and they were talking, saying, you know, all kinds of different stuff, and I was like, man. So it kind of hit me pretty hard, and I just don't go fishing near as much, you know. And as soon as summer comes around, well, they'll want to go play on the boat, and even if it was 10 minutes, you know, that's where I was talking about. I told you earlier, and I can't remember if it was in the podcast or where we went live, but I would wake up, you know, do some things, and it might be 9, 10, 11, 12 o'clock, and I'd be like, well, it's not going to be worth the $60 in fuel to drive over and fish now, because I don't feel like I'm getting, you know, my full day's worth, my money's worth. But, like, if the kids want to go over and play on the boat for 30 minutes, it just doesn't bother me, because – you know, it's worth it to me. Mm-hmm. So I think my desires, you know, changed just a little bit, but, I think that, you know, my competitive drive, of course, is still there and always will be. But I'm, you know, I'm super satisfied and forever grateful for what I've accomplished and the things I've got. So it's just a little bit different than it was, you know, when you're hungry for it.
I like your mindset, brother. You really got a good head on your shoulders. I'm telling you, there's a lot of grown men that are way older than you that don't think like that. And, you know, they're going to turn around and look back one day and like, man, I wish I had a, and they aren't going to be able to, and you're doing it. And I'm, you know, from a dad looking back at a young dad, man, you're doing the right thing. I'm telling you.
Yeah. I was out here in the shop earlier and my kid was, you know, painting a lure and I do some airbrushing on some bass baits and stuff. And he just, of course, just wants a brush and to smack it all around on the bait. And all I could think about is, you get that done, I'm going to have to clear coat it, and I'll just go throw it one time to see if I can catch a fish on it just for you, you know?
Right.
I mean, that's
right.
What I was thinking instead of, you know, I'm, you know, ready to go fish a tournament or something, you know? It's just different, I feel like, now. And we're going to have a little girl next, and I've got the two little boys already, so that's probably going to be another moment where it's going to hit me hard, and, you know, it just depends on you know, the money just isn't, you know, the money isn't worth it to me, you know, to miss out on the time with the kids.
Yeah. Well, look, I'm a girl dad, and I can tell you right now, you better get ready to start winning some tournaments because you're going to need that side cash, okay?
I believe it.
In 2023, time is a valuable thing, and nobody knows this better than the guys at Ludwig Marine. Mitch Ludwig came from working 10 years as a millwright on a swing shift schedule to being a small business owner, and he fully understands how precious time can be for today's fishermen. Dealing in Ranger, Triton, War Eagle, Mercury, Yamaha, Tohatsu, Honda, Gatortail, Copperhead, and now Reaper Boats. For all your boating needs, call Ludwig Marine at 318-545-5595 or go see them at either of their two locations, 110 Old Highway 15 in Farmerville or on U.S. Highway 165 South in Monroe. All right, now to the second thing I heard about or heard when we were speaking earlier, and my brother-in-law is going to laugh at me. I know he ain't listening, but he's going to laugh at me when he hears that I asked this question. What kind of race car did you get rid of?
I had a modified, a B-mod.
Yeah, Mark raced. He raced modified. He moved up to late model this year.
Really?
Yeah.
I've grown up around it, man. I live, you know, close to Lucas Oil Speedway. My uncle has raced since I was itty bitty. One of my best friends that I grew up with raced, and then I had another really good friend that raced bikes and was really good. So I mean, I just grew up around it. It's in my blood. That's probably one of the most passionate things I would have done in my life, other than fishing. But I foreseen the bigger picture with it, that I was going to spend, you know, $20,000 to race for $500 or $600.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
It is fun, you know. I'm not dogging on it by any means, because boy, if I could afford to do it, there's no doubt, you know. And I mean, I think that that's a good excuse for me, because I think when it's something you want to do, you know, you're going to do whatever it takes to get it. But I think rationally a little bit about it, and especially now that I have some kids. Not just that long ago though, I was thinking about buying one again.
Hey, I'm telling you, man, it's addictive when you smell that racing fuel burning, and you hear that it's just. It's good. I love it. I like going out there and watching it. I can definitely see where, you know, listening to you be competitive, where that would be right in your wheelhouse.
If I would have had the money then to really finish it all out and do it, I might have done the same thing there. You know, might have stuck with it and just poured everything I had. But I would. I mean, I probably wouldn't have this shop. I mean, things just, the dominoes went and fell the way that they did. But you know, same thing in the morning for a tournament though, you know, the two stroke smell is, and of course it's kind of dissipating because we got all these four strokes now, but that's something I don't think a guy can get out of his blood either, that blast off and taking off down the water early in the morning. I mean, yeah. That's pretty good too.
That's right. Now to the listeners, I got with Matt and I was like, hey man, what are we talking about? And the first thing he said, if I wanted to listen to a podcast, he said, let's talk about the average guy getting on fish coming out of hunting season. So let's go to there. So give us some ideas. You know, what would you do? You're coming out of hunting season. You know, let's talk about it from a moderate scale of money. You know, the guy may not have a live scope. He may not have, you know, the best stuff. But what do our guys need to look at when they want to go find some fish?
Well, I'm going to say probably, you know, it's almost a must have to have something, some kind of electronic on the back. I know, I mean, I'm sponsored by Garmin and I highly recommend Garmin, but you know, if what you can get a hold of is a cheap Humminbird or a cheap Lowrance, you know, that's what you got to use. And, side imaging is probably the main thing. That way you can see a brush pile, you know, and most of this fishing I'm going to talk about is if you're going to be using one rod, whether it's a short rod or a long rod, is going to be structure oriented. And if you have a spider rigging set up, you know, you don't need necessarily side imaging. You know, it'd be good to find shad, kind of find where the just general fish activity is, but you know, you don't have to have that either. You know, that would be just a thing where, you know, you're going to start maybe a creek channel or a river channel, and you can get a paper map and see that and get pretty close to where you need to be. But it's going to start off with, you know, something with the single pole fishing. You know, you're going to want some kind of unit with a little bit of side imaging. And this time of the year, coming out of hunting season, water's still pretty cold. If we're going to talk about, you know, specifically, we could talk about a lake that's close to a lot of your listeners and I've spent quite a bit of time on, which is Darbone Lake. And, you know, that's one of my favorite lakes as far as fish catching goes. I've done well one time in a tournament there, and then I've struggled a little bit the other few times, you know, a lot of, you know, several top 10s. But the thing about the place was, is you could catch all the fish you wanted. I just struggled coming across the really big ones. The thing is so full of fish. And, you know, one of the places that sticks out to me very vividly is Stowe Creek. Typically, in this time of the year, I'm going to focus on a creek, because what's happening is these days are starting to get longer again. And as they get longer, the fish, you know, come out of the river channel, the deeper water, and they start heading into where they're going to spawn. So if you know where fish spawn and you've caught them previously, you know, through the months of April, May, and caught them spawning, or, you know, middle March to middle of April, you know, you're going to want to back out. And if you have mapping or paper map that you can look, you know, if you can find the gut, the deepest part that runs up in there, that's typically the travel corridor. So you got, you know, river channels and then creek channels that feed that river. And then you got pockets a lot of the times. And I, you know, guts, ditches that go off the side of those creeks. And there's still some main lake pockets as well that are just a big deep gut that run into that river channel that without a defined, you know, creek channel that they're feeding into and then into the river. But, you know, these river channels are like a highway for the fish. And so, like, right now, since we're still pretty early on and a long ways from it, you know, if I was spider rigging or even I was going to take some side imaging and go down through there and try to find some structure a brush pile fish are on, you know, I'm going to start around the mouth of that creek where it's close to the river. And there's times, there's definitely certain situations that, you know, there's fish already, you know, in the very, very back of a creek. But I'm going off of the most congregated places in my mind where they're at right now. And I would start at, you know, the mouth of a creek where it dumps into the river. And even, like, let's say on Darbone right now, there's so many shad in the river channel in the winter, most of the crappie end up there. But that doesn't mean that there's not still fish up one of those creek channels. But I would start in the mouth of a creek channel and spider, you know, spider rigging, especially working my way up the creek until I run into them. And I would, you know, I wouldn't hesitate. You know, I hop up on the flat side. If it's a deep flat close to one of those creek channels or river channel, there's no doubt that fish will get up on those as well. But now, if you can find a brush pile, which is like an irregularity in this situation, on the edge of a creek, or like right up on the edge on that little flat where it turns into a flat, but it's still deep, you know, a lot of fish will pile up on that because it's an irregularity. It's the only thing there for them to get on. And so that's how I traveled the country and fished. Even when it was a tournament and I was looking for big ones, I started, you know, with a little bit of something like that and go find I'd find a irregularity. And then I'd work from there. You know, if they were little fish on it, then I'm going to, you know, go further away from that, maybe further up on the flat, further back in the creek. But a lot of times, you know, when you can find a brush pile like that, it's usually got a congregation of fish. And like on Darbone, I'm going to say I'm focusing on the fish being 12 foot, at least 12 foot down, and at least so 12 foot of water at least out into, you know, the river channel. But they might be 12 foot down and 40 foot of water in that river channel, or 30 foot of water. You know, if you have 2D sonar, you can pay attention to where the shad are at. And typically, a lot of those crappie are going to be mixed in with the shad. A lot of the size that we're going after right now, you know, to fill the cooler up and have a mess to eat, they're very oriented to bait. Now, when we talk about, you know, big fish, they sometimes are a little more loners. They'll get off in the middle of nowhere. There's some situations where you find a place where there's a lot of big ones. And, of course, we call them a honey hole. But, you know, it's hard and very rare to come across that. But where I was talking for an example with Stowe and one of my favorite places to fish, I had fished it even in May, and there was still some fish that hadn't moved up and spawned out in the very mouth of it. You know, a boat lane kind of veers off from where the creek channel is. But if you were to look on a map and look at the river, there's a really deep ditch that's actually that creek channel that swings into it. And I went right through the middle of it, you know, caught like almost a 2-pound crappie that still had a little bit of eggs left in it. And so there's typically through these few months when they transition, always fish out in deep water. And that's why I like deep water, because it stays consistent most of the time.
I got you.
But as we, you know, get closer to the months that they start to spawn, you know, the big congregation of fish then starts moving up that creek as the days get longer and warmer, of course. And when we get those warm, sunny days and we get the first few of them, I look at, especially if I'm going to start looking shallow, I'll go look at a wind-blown bank, because that wind is warm typically, and it's just turning and rolling that water and warming it up there. You know, Garbone is of course just a little bit different as far as the spawn goes, because they'll get on like cypress stump root wads and some stuff like that, which makes it a little bit easier once they do start to spawn. When your water temperature gets, you know, right now it's in the 40s to 50s, and then we get where it starts getting into the mid 50s. That's, I think, when those fish really wake up. They know that it's really time to go, because it's really the length of the days that lets them know to start moving up. But then they actually will go spawn. I think they get close. They'll, you know, you'll move from that creek channel where you're spider egging or a brush pile on a little bit of a flat side. That's whenever you move to the most logical bank, you know, which would be like a creek channel swinged bank. And it swings in, and as that swings back out into maybe the middle of the lake, if you keep going down the bank, it'll typically flatten out. And that's where those fish can get comfortable on, let's say, up here on Highland Reservoirs, you know, more of like a transition where some pea gravel is. But where that flattens out down there, then the first cypress trees that you come to where it flattens out, it's going to be a very, very likely typical common place for the fish to set up to spawn. And the thing is, with what we do as far as tournament fishing, the big fish don't, I mean, there's, you know, just a big wave of fish that goes in, and they're not up there very long. But there's always, you know, tons of males up there for a long time. But whenever I, you know, am tournament fishing, I'm just looking for those bigger fish. And since they don't go up there very long, I stay out in that more consistent water for them, which is the deeper stuff, you know, 6 to 10 foot of water then. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I basically have been working off of Stowe Creek just because it's such a big creek and it has a huge population of fish, and they will live around that vicinity 12 months out of the year. You know, they got the deep water close, they got that major highway that goes up to where they spawn, and they just fall off. And that's usually one of my first starting points when I go anywhere in the country, is a big main creek.
Yeah, I used to live off Stowe, and right where the boat run split, where the one run goes toward Rhett's and the other run goes towards the spillway. Mm-hmm. And man, there used to, I mean, it was, like you said, there was always guys out there fishing, you know, crappie fishing. Mm-hmm. And good place to catch them pulling in on the spawn, especially because, like you were saying, that bank is a, it was like a pea gravel style bank. And man, you could get in there and get them really good. Now it's kind of grown up, and you can't, from where I lived, you'd have to have property. Some of the guys used to line up on the road. I mean, there'd be people lined up shoulder to shoulder on the side of the road. And yeah, I mean, just filling up ice chests.
You know, another example on that lake would be where the highway runs across. I can't remember the 244. Is that maybe it?
No, there's Highway 2, Highway 33, okay.
Two.
And Highway 15.
Well, 15 is where the main put in. Everybody, you know, launches right there by the motel, going by K&M, I believe, right?
No, that's 33. That's going to be the 33 launch. 2 is going to be the one that crosses Stowe Creek. I mean, okay. I'm sorry, 15 is going to be the one that crosses Stowe Creek.
Oh, okay. So, you know, right there where the point goes down and you pull out, you know, you got the big ditch of water that goes in between you and the highway when you're going on the ramp.
Yep, that's 33.
Yeah. Right there off that 33, I mean, I've watched people right there whenever I was struggling out on the main body of the water, you know, during the spawn, so, you know, very late February, if it's a late February with some really good weather and stuff, and then, of course, through March, I've watched them, you know, sitting there just catching the snot out of them off of the cypress stump root was through there, or, you know, just down the bank as well, but mainly, you know, fishing those cypress stumps. The root wads of them, you know, those fish pile up in there, and that's a perfect spot for them because it's similar to a creek, you know, it's something they're moving up into the back of where it's calm and there's not crazy big waves that, you know, irritate them when they're spawning. But you got that river channel really close right there, and you know, it's just a major highway, and they come up out of that river when the days get longer and they stage up, you know, right at the mouth of it. There's been a couple tournaments won right there, as a matter of fact. And then they move on up and into the shallows, into the bank. Mm-hmm. You know, that's pretty much a prime example of a textbook spot.
Okay.
And most of the time, that's what most of these guys that travel the country are guides. You know, we go off of, we're going off of textbook spots. And a lot of it's just been, you know, time on the water, because that's one thing you can't replace even with electronics, is that time on the water.
That's right. That's exactly right. Time on the water is a big, big deal. So now let's go to what are you going to be looking to throw at these fish?
Man, I, you know, whenever I'm fishing without a live scope, I think it goes back to color a lot more. Because you're not getting it right on their nose. You know, you might be 5-6 inches off. And so if I had to just pick three colors, and then we'll get to the bait profiles, or, you know, whether a hair jig or a plastic in a second, I would have a black and chartreuse bait, a, you know, maybe a monkey milk color, or a, you know, a natural color, or like a blue ice is great. And then I would probably have another dark color again, you know, maybe a pearl tail with a black body, or something, you know, something similar to a shad. I think, you know, when it's sunny out, you want to typically let's say dark bone colored water, you know, not crazy muddy, just a little bit of color in it. On a sunny day, I use a lighter color because, you know, they can profile easier. And then on a cloudy day, I use a dark color like the black and chartreuse or a black and pearl. And it's because on the cloudy day, it needs to be darker so they can outline it. Versus whenever, you know, like I was saying, with that sun, it's penetrating the water. They can see it really good with sun, and they all work, you know, all the time, especially when you're getting it right on their nose.
Mm-hmm.
But I think whenever, you know, you're not having electronics, you can put it right on their nose. The color makes a little bit more of a difference.
I got you. Okay.
And I typically, man, I really just like a shad profile, like a little baby shad kind of bait. Chinko has several different ones that I really like, that are a little bit smaller and a little more subtle than like the Bobby Garland baby shad. And they're like called a fry baby. I'm pretty sure that's what they're called, as a fry baby, but they're, you know, they're the same shape. They're like a little shad style bait, is of course a Bobby Garland, and a lot of bait companies have that. But I also, you know, on those days that you've been catching them up there on the bank and they are, you know, shut down and you're not catching them, or even out, you know, of course on a brush pile or even spider rigging, if you've been, it's hard to beat minnows though. That's the thing. It's really hard to beat minnows, and that's usually what you're using on a spider rig. they work sunny, cloudy, windy. It doesn't matter. You know, they're pretty much the cure-all for catching a crappie. But I typically will go to a hair jig whenever things kind of get tough. If a front comes through or they're very pressured fish, I'll go to a little hair jig, and it's just a little more subtle. And, you know, they were used like crazy back in the day, and then they just kind of got away from them. They started mass producing baits, all those colors, you know, caught the fishermen, really. And you could, you know, you get in a rabbit hole with that. You spend a ton of money, and we're trying to keep it simple, you know. So that's why I covered the basis of a natural color, a couple natural colors, and, you know, you maybe a couple bright colors, you know, orange and chartreuse, or white and chartreuse, black and chartreuse, and then of course like a pearl color is really good, or a monkey milk as far as natural goes.
Oh man, but he is one of those that's going to throw a shiner every single time. He cannot, you know, we caught some fish not long ago, and I gave him some, and he's like, "You caught those fish on artificial bait, didn't you?" And I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "I can tell. They tasted different." And I'm like, "Man, come on." He is a diehard shiner guy. Are older guys going to be more like that? And I mean, I'm not trying to age discriminate or anything like that. I'm just asking, because it seems like a lot of that older generation, man, that's their go-to.
Yeah, and I think it's just because they know it works. But, you know, you got some that'll say, "Well, I ain't going to use no live bait." And, you know, I'm fine with that, too. I mean, I fish with a whole slew of different older generation that had, you know, their technique. Yeah. And that is the one thing that I can say probably helps the most, is having a technique that you like. If there's something in your mind that you like to use, you know, you use it. And if it's not working, then try something else. But it's, you know, you got a narrative with the live baits and tournament fishing, of course, that it ain't right and it ain't fair because it's the tournaments. But as far as the recreational fishing goes, you know, if I'm going, if there's a tackle shop that I can stop at and get some minnows, and I'm just going fun fishing, I'm going to have them, you know, because, If I'm going, you know, to catch them to eat, you know, they're going to be stubborn and not bite a jig. I want to come home with something, mm-hmm. you know, if I'm going to have a little fish fry or something. And my boys love eating it, so I like to bring five or six home, you know, and that's about all I ever bring home. I don't try to keep a giant mess of them or anything like that. Darbone Lake is one that you can get you a big old mess, though. I mean, there is so many fish in that lake. That's why I think it's one of the best fishing lakes in the country, you know, because you can go on either end of the lake and there's a lot of fish. The bigger fish kind of live a little bit differently than the numbers in that lake, but there is a ton of fish, you know, from the upper end to the dam, and you can pick just about any area of that lake and there's fish somewhere in there. Now there's some fish that are probably a little, like, they're kind of uncatchable without having a live scope. Some of those, you know, big fish that are running away from you fast, you just never know that they were even there, and you're fishing dead water behind them the whole time, you know. But there's definitely places like we were talking about, like Stowe Creek, you know, that is my starting point. And across the country, a big creek is.
Yeah. So let's wind up, or start winding it down. What about poles? What, you know, there's a gamut of poles out there, links and everything else that a person can use. Is there any, like, somewhere in the middle that somebody could land?
Yeah, there is. You know, there's a lot of brands, and I've represented, you know, a couple. There's a lot of good rods. There are a lot of them that are similar. I've always said, whatever your budget is, you know, you go to a tackle store and you pick them up and you feel them, and whichever one feels the best and it fits the budget, that's usually what I go with. What I recommend, as far as what I'm using now, Jinko rods, they actually have a really good market, because they have rods that are, you know, $27 to, you know, $200. So you have a pretty wide variety of rods that you can choose from, but you know, if you got $100 in your pocket and that's all you can spend and you need your tackle and everything, you know, you can go get you a good pole at Walmart. Start with that. Especially a long rod, you know, you go get, they carry some cheaper end long rods, along with like what I was saying with Jinko fishing. You know, it's just, you gotta find a dealer for them. You know, K&M carries Jinko rods down there, and they have a rod. This is the one I'm specifically talking about, is a Cypress Creek, and it comes in several lengths, and they also have a Lucky series, I believe, or a Hypersense series, my bad, of short rods that are really, really affordable, and they're tough. That's the one thing that I can vouch for with them, is they're very, very tough rods. So protecting your investment, you know, is important. And of course, as I like K&M, you could go in there with $100 and buy a $30-$40 rod and a $15-$20 reel. Just something to hold line on is good enough. You know, you you don't have to have expensive line either. You know, you can get Berkeley Big Game, or you can go to Walmart and get you a Zebco Omniflex for $2 or $3. You know, get you some monofilament line and keep it cheap, and a couple pack of jig heads will get you by, 16ths and 8ths, and you know, just a few colors, like I said, you know, stuff, a couple, you could pick out a couple that catch your eye, and keep it really simple and go to catching fish.
Yeah. Now look, I kind of told a story. We ain't gonna end it there. I'm curious. I mean, just let's hit a little bit on LiveScope. I know Garmin sponsored you. I want you to talk a little bit about that, because I know some of my listeners. That's almost, you know, if somebody brings up crappie fishing in the conversation, LiveScope will be brought up. So, dude, it's fun fishing with that dude. I mean, it is. It's not a guaranteed thing. You know, just because you got them on there and just because you're putting that lure in front of them doesn't mean they're going to bite. But man, it's constant stimulation, and I really, really like it a lot.
Man, it's a amazing tool, but it is a tool, you know. Using it like what I said, you know, about going into Stowe Creek and whatnot, you know, you can use it a couple different ways. You can take it and run through there one day in February and think that they're not there, and then never go back there in February again. Or you could go back through February several more times every chance you get, you know, maybe the first day of February and the last day of February, and learn with it, and learn that they were there at a certain time and then they weren't. So it's a tool that you learn with, but the fascinating part of it is watching the fish, and you know, the database in my brain is where I put a lot of my notes and where I remember seeing fish at certain times. It's an amazing thing. Of course, you know, you get in a rabbit hole with what you want to spend on one and whatnot. And if I were to ever recommend one to somebody, I'd tell them to get a 10-22 or 12-22 and get a, you know, an LVS 32. They're starting to show up a little cheaper. You know, people are selling used ones now here and there, so you can kind of get in a little bit easier on a budget with one. But Garmin electronics all around for me, you know, give me basically a one boat network where I've got everything I need. I've got the Garmin troll motor, my Garmin back graphs, and I love the side imaging on them, and then of course the LiveScope. But that LiveScope is the wheelhouse, man. It's something that a lot of people are getting. There's a lot of people getting really good with it because they're spending that time. You know, you just got to be willing to spend a little bit of time and not get frustrated, because I promise you, there's plenty of days, all these guys that you see holding fish up on Facebook, you're only seeing the best days. There's a lot of rough days out there on the water, and you know, you just got to look at it that you're out on the water and life is good, even if you aren't catching them. But it definitely cuts down on the time that you spend out and don't catch fish, though. You know, you're moving into, you're getting out of the dead water a lot faster when you're not seeing them. You know, you might pick up the troll motor, fire up the big motor, and go 100-150 yards, maybe go off one direction, and I don't care if it's north, south, east, or west, or up and down, the fish move. And you got to move a little bit with them, and like I said, just be a little open-minded, and you know, hey, I get plenty of frustration, you know, and but I take it out, boy, whenever one is biting me and I'm vertical fishing for him and I can set the hook good on him. And that's what we all, you know, I think we all strive for when we go fishing is just to get another bite.
Yeah, and there was, you know, I was just scrolling through your TikToks again today, just kind of, you know, getting freshened up on some stuff. And I mean, guys, go follow him on all the social media you can. You know, he said it before, he's not really good on social media, but what he does have is, trust me, it's good stuff. I mean, you know, one video I watched, he had his sonar set up, and he's showing you the color that he likes. You know, it shows you different colors. I think the screen you like is orange and black. You know, you can see that a little better. And it, you know, he teaches. If I guess a good word for it is, he really goes through and just teaches. So watch it. Get in there. If you're going to pull the trigger, you know, tax time's upon us. If you're one of the lucky ones that's going to get a return, you want to invest in a live scope, you need to follow Matthew Rogers Fishing on all social media, because I'm telling you, the guy, he knows what he's doing. And of course, you could hear from here. And it's really a good time taking a look at him, because who don't like watching fishing, especially when somebody's catching?
Yep.
So
I can agree.
All right, dude. Well, look, man, is there anything else you can think of?
Man, I want to say thank you for the opportunity and thank you to Justin Bailey for hooking us up. And, you know, y'all check out K&M Outdoors down there if you're local. And if you're up around the Springfield, Missouri area, check out Baitworks. They have a ton of stuff there, too. And like I said, I appreciate the opportunity very much.
And I tell you what else. If you come down for a fishing tournament and there's a race somewhere close by, me and you going to go to that race.
Okay. I'll go.
Okay. All right, dude. Well, hey, man, I appreciate your time tonight. And maybe I can get you on again. We can talk more live scope. How about that?
Yeah, I'd be down for sure.
Sounds
good.
You have
good. One thing.
All right, brother. Thank you so much. All right. I thought it was good. I mean, he might. I hope you guys liked that podcast, man. I know I did. I got a lot of stuff out of it. It's going to help me out on my home lake here at Darbonne. And, you know, I see a lot of the newer guys getting in. We talked about that a little bit. I think technology helps some of that. I tell you what else helps is podcasts like this. So share this podcast with your friends. You know, share it with your family. Post it on social media. Really get the word out, man, because, I enjoy doing this. I enjoy bringing you guys information. And I enjoy talking to people that know what they're talking about. Now, if you really want what I think is going to be a great podcast, I get him on. I get Matt on about a couple weeks, maybe a month or so from now, when tax money, don't spend all your tax money in one place, because I'm going to get him on here. We're going to talk everything live scope. If there's a live scope guru, it's going to be this dude. Go to his TikTok and look. He has got all kind of live scope stuff on there. It's fun, informational. The technology's out there, guys. Let's use it. You ain't got to go out, spend an arm and a leg. You don't have to buy brand new stuff, guys. Some of these guys upgrade every year. Try to catch a sale. Try to catch somebody selling some stuff and get in there. So, my name is Greg Hicks. This is the Antlers and Hicks Podcast. And as I'm always going to tell you, I encourage you to live your life past 20 yards. We'll see you next time.